you have a chance to stop this fossil fuel infrastructure that is demanding, pushing its way through the heart of this country. I have a dream back to 1491 I want to share briefly. It's when this land was all tall trees. Our traditional foods were here. Our medicines grew here. Fish were abundant. Then they started to call it Stumptown. I don't like that name because we knew what was here. You have a chance for the future to take this good-heartedness of the people and the land and make it right. Be that leader. March to Paris. Tell them. Be that change. Aye, Katsiaryo.
Thank you very much.
You are going to Paris, right?
As a matter of fact, I'm going to march. I probably can't march to Paris, but I'm going to get there. So let's take the next three.
Are Liel Voss Andre, Kyle Smith Doolittle, and Reverend Marilyn Sewell. And they'll be followed by Ted Gleichman, Mark Farrell, and Kirk Richardson.
Welcome. Good afternoon. Would you like to be first? Go ahead.
Sure.
While the others are getting settled. Just pull that microphone a little closer to you. There you go.
Thanks. Mayor Hales, members of this council, my name is Kyle Smith Doolittle, and I'm a senior at Madison High School. Thank you for listening to me speak today about the importance of passing the fossil fuel resolution. Expanding fossil fuel infrastructure is irresponsible and short-sighted. From every angle, voting no on the fossil fuel resolution is a mistake. The expansion of the fossil fuel industry is generally justified with local economic opportunities. The prospect that something creates jobs does not mean it is a good decision. The long-term environmental and economic costs associated with enabling this industry outweigh the minimal short-term economic benefits. As a high school student, I will inherit the benefits and implications of decisions made by current governments. The choices made by previous generations to ignore the consequences of our dependence on fossil fuels is having severe impacts on current generations. Fossil fuels are not a long-term solution to the energy crisis. The end of the era of fossil fuels is already apparent. President Obama rejected the Keystone XL pipeline last Friday, indicating a trend in future national policy. We can either prepare for the future or cling to the past. We must prove to the world and ourselves that amidst crisis, we are capable of action. The city of Portland has the opportunity to lead the charge in the inevitable energy revolution. Oregon used to be on the cutting edge of environmental efforts. We have fallen behind. We can regain our place as a leader in environmental policy and pave the road for future legislation across the country. I encourage you to pass this resolution. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Marilyn, welcome.
Thank you. Mayor and commissioners, I just want to thank you for your service to our city. It's not easy being in that position, but thank you. I am Marilyn Sewell, Minister Emerita of the First Unitarian Church, a congregation of some 1,600 individuals who were very involved in justice issues, including climate justice. I also represent Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon, where I was on the board for 6 years, a group of over 165 churches, ecclesiastical institutions, and interfaith organizations. Today, I want to question Commissioner Fish's Amendment Number 2 concerning the need for an analysis of potential impacts to local blue-collar jobs. Every time I come to one of these climate hearings, business interests talk about jobs. What jobs will be lost? How can we secure more jobs? But the question here today is not how can we preserve just any jobs. The question is, first of all, what is the right thing to do? What is the right thing to do? And once we decide that, then we decide which jobs. I mean, we could build a bridge to nowhere. But jobs would be created, but at what cost to the community? So business interests are saying jobs, jobs, jobs. But you know what? I'm hearing money, money, money. We want and deserve jobs that will be green and sustainable, that will lead us to a transition away from fossil fuels. Those are the only energy-related jobs that we should be encouraging and protecting. And I would like to say one more thing, if I may. I hear some people say, well, aren't these activists just hypocrites? Don't they come here in cars? And those kayaks, aren't they made of plastic? We all use fossil fuels, they say. Actually, thanks to big oil, we in this country have been made thoroughly reliant upon fossil fuels. They are totally integrated into our living. This charge of hypocrisy is one that serves only to constrain the moral voice of the people. I hope I never hear it again from a business leader and certainly not from an elected official.
Thank you very much.
Mayor, can I just clarify something?
I think
you make an excellent point. I just want to clarify something. The Climate Action Plan contains a directive that we, based on feedback from the public, gave to Planning and Sustainability Commission that they consider a number of factors, including the economic impact. That was our directive to PSC. And the reason I have separated out that amendment with the retraining amendment is that in order to understand where we put our investments in helping workers retrain, we have to understand the economic impact. And finally, not a single amendment that I prepared was prepared with so-called business interests.
Thank you for that response. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note, we'll make sure that the economic analysis looks at both problems of people that might be moving out of an industry and opportunities of all the new industries that we're creating here. I mean, we have 12,000 people working in green tech in Portland. Those are great. Some of them are great blue-collar jobs because we actually make things here that are, for example, we make generators that fit into water lines, and Commissioner Fish has installed them in parts of our water system. So there are blue-collar jobs in the new economy as well as in the old. So we'll make sure it's a truly balanced economic analysis that looks at both.
Yeah, and let me maybe state even more plainly. Amendment 2 is not a roadblock. Amendment 2 is the bridge to the next economy. And along the way, I believe that blue and green link arms and we're a better community. So don't mistake the intent of it, because that was not
yes,
my intent.
Yes, thank you so much for clarifying that. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Hello and welcome. Get nice and close to that microphone and tell us what you think.
Hi, my name is Liel and I'm 8 years old. Thank you, Mayor, for stopping all fossil fuel projects in the city. Because if nobody commits to stopping fossil fuel projects, then people will have more fires often, animals extinct, and beauty black. Please make sure our city is safe. Commissioners, please vote yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
We suspend the rules, Mayor.
Yes, let's suspend the rules. We clap for students at all times.
Mayor.
Thank you.
Mayor, we've had, I think, 2 or 3 hearings. We've had hours and hours of testimony. I think we can all agree that was the most effective advocacy we've had during this entire process.
Absolutely.
Very succinct and well
absolutely
done.
The best. All right, who wants to follow that? Good job.
Mayor, may I add a new amendment to say express our intent to reduce the voting age to 6?
Good idea. All right.
Next three are Mark Farrell. Ted Gleichman, Mark Farrell, and Kirk Richardson. And they will be followed by Wiley G. Barnett, Rick Brown, and Peter Tenneau.
Good afternoon.
Mayor, commissioners, appreciate your letting me be tardy. The flat tire on my truck today has reduced my carbon footprint, improved my walking, busing, and train skills, and given $2 in additional revenue to TriMet. Last week, I provided to you hard copy of documents around the climate impacts of natural gas. Commissioner Saltzman, this set is for you. I'm Ted Gleichman. I'm with the Center for Sustainable Economy and Sierra Club. And my little piece of this is to emphasize the fact that there is no fossil fuel solution to the fossil fuels crisis. And the three documents that I gave you last week and today and provided now electronically as well to you and your teams and as testimony submittal, really demonstrate the current state of the science. It is not possible to characterize natural gas or any other gaseous hydrocarbon, including propane, as climate solutions based on the science that is now really definitively defined. And it's really important in terms of dealing with this kind of a broad approach to the climate crisis that we understand that. And I want to turn quickly, though, to the Clean Fuels Program conversation that occurred last week. There are two key points around that. One is to remember that this was originally approved in 2009 under the administration of Governor Kulongoski. And at that point in time, we did think that natural gas was the bridge to the future. So the inclusion of natural gas and propane in that program was not unreasonable in that era. And if you think back, the second point is, if you think back on the how vitriolic the struggle got in the last session of the legislature, as compared to how warm and friendly this has all been here, you'll recall that this was a bitter fight over the simple removal of the word sunset. And a decision was made by the organizations that were the primary advocates of the Clean Fuels Program that it was not possible to work in the legislature this year for a broader redefinition of the program to try to get it to survive and to move forward, to collect the data, and to see what could be done in the existing model. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Appreciate that context. Thank you.
Okay. Mark Farrell or Kirk Richardson? Okay, let's go ahead and go with Wiley G. Barnett, Rick Brown, and Peter Tineau. And then next would be Don Orange, Father Jack Mossbrook, and Lowen Berman will follow them.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon, City Council, Mayor, and Commissioners. My name is Wiley G. Barnett. I'm a plus 40-year resident of Northeast Portland. And I want to read a short statement that I made. This resolution and its amendments herald a major constructive commitment to the health and safety of Portlanders and the protection of our environment. It further provides reinforcement to strengthen the city's movement toward addressing the need for alternative sources of the people's energy needs and jobs. But let me make something very clear at this important juncture. This city, its government, its people, and its social institutions will not succeed unless we all succeed together. As by now we all know, and as daily news reports remind us, that the forces of racial injustice, segregation, ethnic isolation are endemic and systemic. Evidence abounds in the organizations of governance, justice, labor, business, schools, and even the environmental movement itself. So in the commendable initiative to protect this city from the dangers of hazardous materials, I therefore repeat, we all must be involved and engaged from the start and not just as an afterthought. Therefore, I assert that in the amendment, the Fish Amendment, and since you've changed the numbers round and round, I don't know what's what, but the paragraph that includes things like business, labor, neighborhoods, and so forth, the following words should be inserted after the word neighborhoods, the words ethnic communities. Otherwise, we will be overlooked once again, and our concerns and interests not taken into account.
Thank you very much.
Mayor Hales, I think it's a splendid suggestion, and I'm prepared to accept it as a friendly amendment.
Okay.
Second.
All right. The maker of the motion.
Do we need a roll call, or can we just accept it?
I think that's a friendly amendment. If the maker of the motion and the
accept the language change, and thank you for your proposal, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Good idea. Welcome.
Thank you. Mayor Hales, Commissioners, my name is Rick Brown, and I'm speaking today on behalf of 350 PDX, where I serve as a member of the volunteer board. My background is in forest ecology, and I've written on the implications of climate change for forest management. But today, in support of the resolution and Commissioner Fish's amendments, I'll read a statement from Dr. Mark Jacobson of Stanford University, where he is professor of civil and environmental engineering and director of the Atmosphere Energy Program. He and his team have assessed pathways to 100% renewable energy for the U.S. as a whole, for each state, and for more than 100 other countries around the world. His extensive and highly cited articles in top scientific journals have established him as the leader in this sort of analysis. His statement, edited for brevity, is as follows. We have developed a science-based plan for converting the energy infrastructure of Oregon to one derived entirely from wind, water, and solar power for all purposes, electricity, transportation, heating, cooling, and industry by 2050. The generation of such infrastructure would create 22,000 40-year construction jobs and 14,000 40-year operation jobs. It would eliminate 450 premature deaths each year from air pollution due to fossil fuels and eliminate global climate emissions from the state. It would stabilize energy prices because wind and solar fuel costs are zero. Each Oregonian would save about $30 in fuel costs per year, but the state would benefit by $5,000 per person per year in health plus climate cost reductions. This roadmap would also eliminate Oregon's reliance on imported fuels and would reduce catastrophic and terrorism risk because most wind and solar would be distributed rather than centralized. Sincerely, Mark Jacobson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
My name is Peter Tenno, and I'm here again, but this time with a different emphasis, with some specifics that I think can't be overstated. It's a gloomy subject, but here are some things we know. We know that a rush of oil train disasters, derailments, and consequent fires and explosions. Rail tracks are inadequately inspected and deficiently maintained. Much expanded air transport will only exacerbate the problem. DOT-111 tank cars carrying the bulk of volcanic and acid Bakken crude are not required to be upgraded, and that production of newer cars, will not meet demand for years. In a Richter 8 earthquake, these cars will topple. Railroad bridges and trestles are dangerously faulted. Fire and hazmat teams simply cannot handle the larger threat of oil disasters. Ubiquitous oil trains and shorter car strings on sidings, an open target for terrorists and malefactors. And larger still, we know that the consequences of fossil fuel, its mining and transportation, its pollution and use has placed the environment and the Earth's population at a point of no return. So today, I urge you to pass this resolution. Among cities, let Portland shine.
Thank you very much. Thank you all.
The next three are Don Orange, Father Jack Mossbruce, and Loan Berman. And then they'll be followed by, we have three of Sunnyside students.
Father Mossbrucker, I think you can go ahead.
Thank you. Okay. My name is Father Jack Mossbrucker, and I'm a priest of the Archdiocese of Portland. And I want to thank you for this opportunity to speak here today.
Just get a little closer to that. You could pull the whole box a little closer to you there. There you go.
I'm not used to speaking with a microphone. The proposed resolution presents a pivotal moment for action regarding not only the welfare of our society, but also of future generations, our children and grandchildren. We have been given this wonderful gift, this planet, this earth on which we live. And that entails the responsibility to protect it and to make sure that future generations can also enjoy it and live on it. The problem of climate change is...
Sorry, that's not your doing. We'll fix it.
The problem of climate change is certainly beyond denial, and its effects upon people are obvious and certainly chronicled. the primary cause of burning fuels, fossil fuels, is something you've listed in your resolution itself. But the but we already, as you know, these concerns are concerns of elected officials because of all the regulations that have been passed, some from cars and smog, and from the regulations that have been passed for emissions, and the decommissioning of coal-fired generating plants, indicate this is already a problem, and you can do something about it. It also implies a responsibility for these regulations, and that responsibility ultimately lies with elected officials. We the people can push, we can urge, we can demand, but you can vote, and you can make changes. And you're charged, of course, with caring for the welfare of people, the welfare of people and the commons. And that caring for that people, you have already exhibited affordable care, housing, $15 an hour. You say that's important. And within this responsibility, especially those groups that you have responded to in affordable housing and in $15 an hour, are the marginalized. Those are the people ultimately we should care for. We should care for first, and they are the ones who are going to endure the effects of these climate change.
Thank you.
And they're going to be. And
you should wrap up, Father Mosbacher. So.
That's 40.
That's over. It's 40 seconds over.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, you can't slow down a preacher.
I know that. That's.
I'm gonna try. We really want to be able to vote today, so you're making a really good case.
I understand. So, but in passing this resolution, there's also a challenge that is underlying it, and that challenge is to have an imagination of an alternative society in which we don't have fossil fuel burning, an imagination that says we can live and benefit this society from that. This decision is not limited issue to Portland. John Muir, who founded the Sierra Club, put it this way. He says, you try to pick out anything by itself, and we find it connected to everything else in the universe. Pope Francis echoed that by simply saying, everything is connected. What you do here today is connected to everything else. Thank you for voting for this resolution.
Thank you very much. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Don Orange. I'm here. I'm a businessman from Vancouver, Washington, representing Vancouver 101, which is 101 businesses that have come together in opposition to our city's oil terminal. The point that business is not universally in bed with the oil companies. Small business needs our community. These are my customers. This is what we're about. It needs to be said, our oil terminal, which is supposed to pump 5 billion gallons into the Pacific Ocean each year, is said to provide 175 jobs. They tell me that there's jobs induced by this. We believe that it will induce failures of businesses. We believe it will induce businesses to pick clean cities to go to. Dirty little Vancouver will become a lot like Tacoma. For every one of those 175 jobs, we believe that we will lose 15 jobs in clean energy, in computer services, in software, in these other things. We've proven it on paper. This nonsense that this is a path to prosperity, to put oil into the Pacific Ocean, whether it's going to Asia or to California. They're going to use our beautiful Columbia Gorge. Oregon and Washington are the same. We're the same people. We breathe the same air. We share the same waterways. I was raised here. I spent half my life here. I lived on both sides of the Willamette River. You people need to go ahead with this. I appreciate that you're bringing this up. Business needs to back you up. You need to understand that this isn't a question good God, the Teamsters used to run horses. And 100 years ago, that became impractical. That wasn't the way for the new century. This is the new century. It's not time to keep bringing this fuel down here. We don't use this fuel here. That's not what's being proposed in these oil terminals for bringing this filthy oil from the Midwest down into the Portland, Vancouver, Puget Sound areas. This is great, great for the railroads and great for the oil companies, for the people here and the businesses here and people that need work here. It stinks. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks for coming over.
Hi. My name is Lowen Berman, and I'm a resident in Northeast Portland. Let me tell you something about myself. I've been a member of at least 4 trade unions and vice president of one of the largest union locals in Oregon. I've been a punch press operator, a truck loader, and a warehouse laborer. I've been a production assembler and a telephone wire inspector. I'm a journeyman machinist. I've been a union negotiator and arbitrator. I've been a paid and unpaid union organizer. I also have a master's degree in labor studies. I am offended by the crocodile tears shed by some corporate and business leaders about income inequality and the plight of the working class. We all want family wage jobs. Older folks remember the newsreels of World War II factories pouring out tanks and planes by the thousands. No shortage of jobs then. What we need today is a similar level of mobilization, but with factories pouring out wind turbines and solar plants and electric vehicles and new generations of energy storage systems. We need to build, install, and maintain a new energy and transportation infrastructure. We need to retrofit millions of energy-inefficient buildings. Such a mobilization would provide many times more jobs than the dying fossil fuel industry can produce. Many labor leaders understand this reality and are supporting the fight for climate justice. Others are trying to hang on to the very few remaining union jobs by becoming allies to a dying industry. If this council is truly concerned about the interests of labor, your concern must extend to the millions of farmers and workers in the U.S. and abroad whose land and lives are and will continue to be devastated by climate change and fossil fuel extraction. I'm old. I'm retired. Unlike many who have testified from the business community, I have no financial skin in this game, but it's clear to me that the interest of my fellow workers and of all of the world's children lies with the embrace of a sustainable future, not a dying, inequitable, catastrophic past. Please pass this resolution, make it real, and begin a just transition to a new and better world. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Next. 37, I will tell you, a lot of us rank and file holders are 100% behind that. That's absolutely true. When I talk to everybody on the job site, it's just the leadership that has other things.
Thank you.
Next are our 3 Sunnyside students, and they'll be followed by Bill Edens, Peter Wilcox, and Julie Chapman.
Good afternoon. And backup. About reinforcements. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
Nice to have you back.
I'm Ella Schreiner.
I'm Liliana Schilling.
And I'm Zella Hush.
We are students from Sunnyside Environmental School. Some of us testified before you last week. We are here in part to thank you for the decision that you made in passing the oil train resolution. We know that decisions like that are hard to make, and we are very inspired by the 4-0 vote on Wednesday. We have also come today to urge you to follow up on that decision and to make a broader and bolder statement, eliminating the expansion of fossil fuels. We hope that the City Council will not do anything to weaken or delay this resolution.
Today, the extraction of fossil fuels releases megatons of CO2 and methane into the atmosphere, changing the very climate on this planet. For years, 8th graders have been taking an overnight trip to Catalina Island to study the unique kelp forest there. This trip is considered one of the most exciting things we do at Sunnyside, a rite of passage into high school. Last year, the Sunnyside 8th grade class, on their trip to Catalina, discovered that there is no kelp due to warming ocean temperatures. Right now, global warming is looking pretty bad, but that doesn't mean that this has to be our future. Let's turn the clock forward 200 years.
Mom, hurry up. We don't want to be late to the 200th year commemoration of the 2015 fossil fuel resolution. You know, the one that changed the course of history and the ideas of the time? Just think, it all happened in the small city of Portland, Oregon. The city council said no to the ideas of the time and became global leaders. They decided to protect and honor all children on life on planet Earth at all costs. They took a stand against climate change, and it all started with a promise, a resolution. They remembered that there was another way to live on planet Earth, and they knew they didn't have a moment to waste, so they listened to the children.
This is a possibility.
We can work together to take a stand against climate change.
We, as the future generation, hope that you will be our heroes of tomorrow, and that you will take a revolutionary stand with us to stop global warming.
Let's suspend the rules.
As the students of Sunnyside Environmental School, would like to honor you all for being environmental champions with these awards. Thank you for going up to bat for the planet, and together with this resolution, we know you can make a home run. Okay. Commissioner Novick, the greatest threat to our planet is the belief that someone else will save it.
Thank you.
For Commissioner Fritz, unless someone like you cares a whole awful lot, nothing is going to get better. It's not.
Dr. Seuss, always a good source.
For Mayor Hales, it's better to look at a future with opportunities than to find ourselves looking back with regret. Ella and Erin Schreiner. Thank you. For Commissioner Saltzman, when the last tree is cut down, and the last fish has eaten, and the last stream poisoned, we will realize that we cannot eat money. For Commissioner Fish, we do not inherit... we do not inherit the earth from our ancestors. We borrow it from our children. Is that the wrong one?
No, you got it. You got it right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Those are wonderful. Nice job, students. Let's hear it for the students.
Colleagues, I just have to say that I was told in advance that Liliana Schilling was going to be here today, and I made up my mind not to decide my vote until after she testified. Now my mind is made up.
She's pretty persuasive. All right.
The next three are Bill Edens, Peter Wilcox, and we're going to go with Pam Ortizer. And then they'll be followed by Julie Chapman, Claudia Keith, and Antonio Zamora.
Okay. Good afternoon.
Pam is here. Come on.
Dang, that's a hard act to follow.
It is. Really. You're in a tough spot.
My name is Father Bill Edens. I'm a Paulist father, and recently we arrived here about a year ago to work at St. Philip Neri Parish. Parish where they had the Muddy Boot Festival for many years, which probably a number of people here know about. That was based on the work of the bishops of the Columbia River area. We got together and wrote a pastoral letter. This was Columbia River. The watershed includes British Columbia, Alberta, Montana, Idaho, Washington, Utah, Oregon. And they wrote about caring for creation and our common good. And the commons is a historical term that relates to the grassy area in a village that was used by everybody with all of their flocks on the same piece of ground. And in our day, that refers to all the land and the river that belongs to all of us. And the bishops say the commons belongs to everyone, and yet it belongs to no one. We hold this land in trust for our present use and also for future generations. Pope Francis, in his encyclical Laudato Si, which is caring for our common home, he says there is pollution that crosses all boundaries that affects everyone, like transport of industrial materials and fossil fuels. Technology is presented as a way of solving all these issues, but it often is incapable of seeing the network of relations between all things. The earth, our home, St. Pope Francis says, the earth, our home, is beginning to look like a pile of filth. Frequently, no measures are taken until after people's health has been irreversibly affected. These problems are closely linked to a throwaway culture that affects the excluded people just as it quickly reduces things to rubbish. I spent several years ministering at University of California, Berkeley, and they have many projects towards developing renewable energy, one of them being artificial photosynthesis, which takes water and carbon dioxide, puts it together into a fuel that can be used in cars and trucks, which is burned, and then it releases so it takes up all the carbon dioxide that it uses in the end. So it's energy neutral. And so these are the kind of things that will be helpful for us to develop, to use more of these things and not to use fossil fuels. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Peter, welcome.
Hi. Greetings, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm president of Columbia Riverkeeper, but I'm going to speak today as the owner of two small businesses or co-owner of two small businesses here in Portland. One of those companies is Sequential Biofuels, whose hat I'm literally wearing today. First, I want to thank you all for writing such an excellent policy, and thank you, Senator Dingfelder, for your contributions to this, too. I know they're significant. What is great about this policy is that you've included the direction to city agencies to actually put this into code. That's, I believe, historic. And I think that the timing couldn't be better, as we know, with the Paris talks about to begin. In my opinion, this hits the sweet spot of Portland's values and our goals for our community and our future. The children have made that very clear, and protects our safety, and it'll help steer future investment, both in private industrial and also port investments, in exactly the right direction, the smartest and most forward-thinking way to go. So thank you for that. So I believe this policy will do great things for Portland and our reputation, our brand, our economy, but equally for my two small businesses. And I think that which are a green building business and then also alternative energy. And I think that I'd really urge you to make it a unanimous vote. I think that would send a really great signal to the world. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you both.
The next three are Julie Chapman, Claudia Keith, and Antonio Zamora. And they'll be followed by Sandy Polishek, Beppe Shapiro, and Nick Caleb.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Julie Chapman, representing the League of Women Voters of Portland. And thank you for clarifying the intent of the amendments today. It jury-rigged my testimony, but I think we're on the same page. The League of Women Voters of Portland continues to support this resolution. It's a statement of intention and a model for other local and state mandates to reduce reliance on the coal and oil industries. We do have reservations about amendments that require further study and could delay implementation of the resolution. However, if approval of these amendments would not weaken the resolution or postpone the work of developing proposed code changes, we can be pleased to support Resolution 1179. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you. And as I think you heard in the council's discussion, in my opinion, we've not weakened it, and none of these requirements for further action will involve delay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Welcome.
My name is Claudia Keith. I represent the League of Women Voters, Oregon. And I'd like to thank Julie today and all of you for your leadership in this very important topic. And I, too, want to emphasize the fact that it's important that we pass this resolution today with a sense of urgency and a sense of leadership. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hey, thank you. This is really fascinating that this is happening. Today's my birthday, so I spent whole day.
Happy birthday. Class to Give get us your here. Name, though, for the record.
My name is Antonio Zamora. As many some people don't know, I am an Oregonian, and so is my mother, and my mother's side of the family are too. I'm a Portland-born Chicano. I'm an activist. I participated with Occupy Portland, other social justice movements in our city, and recently Portland versus Shell. And I was in a kayak when the polar pioneer, polar discoverer was tugged in the port of Seattle, too. At the time, 7 kayakers, we moved the polar pioneer aground for 6 hours without violence. Another world is possible. We can divest. We can change. I'm going to the climate talks, and I want to represent my home city that we are against climate change. Please support Amendment 4, Fish. To all members of council, do not be idle. Our legacy against climate change matters to generations after us. Please divest, Portland, divest.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
These three are Sandy Polishek, Beppe Shapiro, and Nick Caleb. And they'll be followed by Katja Jones, Eric LeBrant, and Stephen Eldridge.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Mayor Hales and Commissioners, my name is Sandy Polishek. I'm the Reinvestment Coordinator for 350 PDX. I wish to speak to the amendment that asks for an analysis of the economic impacts of any proposed code changes on jobs. You've already voted to disinvest from fossil fuel securities, a wise decision given the increasingly risky nature, vulnerable to becoming stranded assets as the world acknowledges and acts on the necessity of keeping most carbon reserves in the ground. In your disinvestment resolution, you noted numerous ways climate will affect our economy negatively by impacting infrastructure and our built environment, creating new costs for families, businesses, and governments. You recognize the economic burden to households, power generation, agriculture, forestry, salmon recovery, snow-based recreation, coastal tourism and infrastructure, and public health. Our city, under your leadership, has made us a leader in climate change response and planning. This resolution continues this outstanding leadership. I'm very pleased by the amendment to the amendment, the addition that will now inform the city on how to support a just transition for workers to a clean energy economy. None of us has a crystal ball to foresee exactly what the balance will be between blue-collar jobs lost in one set of sectors if we do this, compared to blue-collar jobs lost in other sectors if we do not. But we can make a rational decision based on science to lower our carbon footprint and other risks from fossil fuels in order to save ourselves and our planet for future generations. There are no jobs on a dead planet. I've brought copies of an article for you that was just published earlier this week, entitled Going Off Fossil Fuels Would Boost Disposable Income and Create 1 Million Jobs, that sheds light on some of the alternatives to fossil fuel infrastructure jobs. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Nicholas Caleb. I'm currently at the Center for Sustainable Economy. I'm a policy fellow, and I teach at Concordia University. I'm kind of crawling out of my skin with excitement today, I have to say. This is great. I'm you know, very, I'm anticipating a 5-0 vote because who would vote against this? And I'm feeling very enthusiastic that the city of Portland is putting itself out there to be the leader and that we should be. And everybody who votes and has pushed for this, especially Commissioner Fritz and Mayor Hales, deserves a tremendous amount of credit for bringing this to the forefront. And so thank you so much for this. I'm sort of, my role today was to speak sort of as a low-wage worker. I think that the last hearing, many of us were bothered by the idea that there's a disconnection between labor and environment, that there's some kind of like wall that's splitting apart and people have labor interests and they have jobs, and then there's these, you know, like wealthy folks that are environmentalists and, you know, they're kind of pushing all this stuff forward. I think they were referred to as special interest, and the environment's not a special interest. That's a common interest that we all share in first, but young people are almost uniformly united in the fact that we're looking forward to a terrible economy in front of us if things go the way that they are, and we don't want to compound that with a terrible environment upon it. Saying no to the fossil fuel infrastructure and starting to set a trend forward is going to be good for everybody in the long term because it puts pressure on those other sectors and economy that we're going to have to reform in the same way that we reform our industry. These are inevitabilities, and so when we say no to new fossil fuel infrastructure, we put pressure on those other sectors as well to be creative. Can't say it enough. This is a great day for Portland. It's a great day, you know, for the world, and it's going to be really exciting to watch other people follow in our footsteps. And like the Sunnyside kids were saying, you know, people will remember days like this when people say the right thing, when they follow science and they say exactly how we're supposed to be acting in the world. So thanks again. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you.
The next three are Katja Jones, Eric LeBrant, and Stephen Eldred. And they'll be followed by Scott Lewis, Baron Glasgow, and Harriet Cook. We'll go.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
All right. Well, good afternoon. I'm Eric LeBrant, Commissioner-elect of the Port of Vancouver, USA, and President of Vancouver's largest and most industrial neighborhood, Fruit Valley. In June of 2014, nearly 700 people publicly supported Vancouver City Council in their resolution against oil trains, setting an all-time attendance record. Most are here today to support you, and we thank you for your leadership. When Cortez reached North America, he ordered his soldiers to burn the ships. In spite of their fears, burning one's ships doesn't actually make the path forward more difficult. Commitment devices like this protect us from the temptation to turn back. Adolescence and midlife crisis are two other times when we face the choice to avoid responsibility and backtrack or to move ahead to bigger and better things. Likewise, resolving to forbid the expansion of fossil fuel infrastructure does not impede our forward progress. It only makes it more difficult to regress. Despite cries to the contrary, this resolution does not prevent us from building or growing. It provides forward direction on what we will build and how we will grow. As we continue to innovate and find cheaper, more efficient ways to power our homes and businesses, markets for coal and oil continue to fade. Your charge is to build and strengthen the city of Portland, and this resolution protects Portlanders from the hydrocarbon industry's rush to make one last quick buck off markets in Asia before their window of opportunity closes forever. Greater Portland, Inc. and the Columbia River Economic Development Council are already working hard to attract and grow businesses in our area. Petroleum export simply doesn't have the long-term potential to make it into the Greater Portland 2020 plan. Coal, oil, and gas are actually distractions from the kinds of investments we need to bring jobs and growth to this region. Today, we support you in your resolution to not get distracted. Let's stick to the plan and make it easier to stick to the plan in the future by removing that dead-end temptation. Let's keep building and moving forward by resolving not to shift into reverse on down the road. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. My name is Stephen Eldred. I am a continuing student at the National American University in Tigard. I am also a practicing environmentalist. I'd like to share three basic scenarios that I picture most of the time. And admittedly, I'm no expert at the components of climate change. I'm still studying, you know, making notes of whatever I can to learn for future environmental careers. But I do know for sure that there's going to be one of three scenarios that turn out for our future generation. One worst case scenario, we don't learn to change our habits and switch to more sustainable sources for energy. And in turn, our planet gets depleted to the point of everyone dying of starvation, dehydration, and suffocation. That's scenario one. Scenario two, I would imagine, is a very rough transition to our future generations surviving just by a thread, whereas there might be wars breaking out from other nations or rebellions, viewing us, everyone, as consumerist societies, as the enemy, and try to, want to take what we're taking away from them. Hopefully it won't turn out that way. Or scenario three, the best case scenario, is that we quickly avoid wars realizing our habits that have an impact, the resources we use, how it affects everything as a whole, not just in our little communities, our little so-called bubbles, but within this atmosphere that we all share. That's just how it is. And so how I heard about this meeting was through 350 PDX, and I heard through about 350 PDX by reading this book called In Eco Mind by Francis Moorlap, because at the time, and still is, most of my information I get from reading current environmental articles and testimonial books. And so if I hadn't read that book, I probably wouldn't be here today. And so after hearing all these powerful, effective testimonies, I assume that most of you are aware of this as well, or you probably wouldn't be here either. Daily, when I still do see, contraries to what we're fighting for, as in fossil fuel burning cars continue to be driven and trash continue to still be on the street, those are the moments that I get discouraged. But today I'm very much encouraged, and I'm glad to have actually chosen to go to this meeting and get more personal inside viewpoints from like-minded people such as yourselves.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Thank you both. Okay. Smetsmar. What's that? Last panel? Yeah, I think we probably have to, we're going to have to move to voting pretty soon. You have still quite a few folks signed up. So let's see if we can't take a few more before we get to 4 o'clock and vote.
So next is Scott Lewis, Baron Glasgow, and Harriet Cook. And they'll be followed by Michael Coven, David Medford, and John Nicol.
Okay. Take those six, and then we'll see if we're ready to take action. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to see you again.
You too.
Here
Thank
a couple
you.
Weeks ago.
Yes.
Basically here promoting the same sort of thing. Different issue, same issue, which is our economic system. But I want to begin by thanking you.
Oh, put your name in the record, sorry.
Oh, Harriet Cook.
Yes, Harriet.
Semi-retired physician, master in public health. I want to thank you for the example that you give in the way that you have worked on this resolution and the amendments. I think it's beautiful, and I'm proud to be part of this city. This is the beginning. When I hear about the assessments that need to be made on the economic impact, my guess is that we're looking at it from eyes that are looking at the economic system that we exist in, which is not the economy that is going to sustain us. Fortunately, a book by economists just came out that I'm here to promote, Enough is Enough, Building a Sustainable Economy in a World of Finite Resources. And some of the weird lunatic ideas that I've been carrying forth on my torch, I haven't been able to find other people, they're in here, so I feel kind of validated. And Mayor Hales, I understand you're about to leave on a sabbatical. I'd like to think of it that way, but I would like to invite you and the rest of the council to take a look at this book and really start to expand your vision about not only what's possible, but what's absolutely essential if we are going to preserve this planet and have jobs and food and meet the needs of everybody, which is absolutely possible. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Mayor Hills, Commissioners. My name is Baron Glasgow. I'm a senior director of the National Propane Gas Association. I'm an executive director of the Pacific Propane Gas Association. With the minister that was here earlier, I just want to note that my dad was a minister, and I'm a preacher's kid. When my dad was buying the Opopo, they used to say that the congregation needed a calendar instead of a watch. And so I will promise to be brief. I appreciated the comments that you, in the discussion earlier today, about the definition of end user. For us in our industry, that's a really important discussion item. In the propane industry, we have several organizations and customers that would like to expand their use of propane as a less carbon-intensive fuel than some of the alternatives. Examples of those are the Portland Public Schools. Currently, Portland Public Schools transport almost 8,000 kids a day on propane school buses, and their ability to expand propane, the use of propane, as opposed to gasoline or diesel, is really important. We also have landscaping companies who are adopting newer technologies, such as propane commercial lawnmowers, as opposed to gasoline or diesel mowers that spew out more carbon, they require more maintenance, and they're subject to spills of gasoline and diesel, whereas propane is non-toxic, and if you spill it, it doesn't contaminate soil or water. And so, again, the ability of end users to be able to expand their use of those fuels as opposed to more carbon-intensive fuels is really important, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, you want to take three more, and then we'll move to action.
I have Michael Colvin, David Medford, and John Nicol.
Welcome.
Mayor Hales, commissioners, my name is Michael Colvin. I'm a retired teacher, pastor, I'll be brief, and I also had some career in emergency management. My concerns today about this, about the resolution, have to do with emergency management issues and existing facilities that we have in Portland, particularly the tank farms along the northern Willamette. If you've seen OPB's unprepared documentary, you've seen graphic animations of what is really expected to happen in that case. And it would be a massive disaster inside of an enormous disaster in a Cascadia subduction zone earthquake. The companies that own those tanks have refused to mitigate or do any remedial work to keep them from sinking into the ground because they're on liquefaction soils. I'm wondering if there's anything that could be done in the language of these proposals, these resolutions, to ensure that those companies are made accountable for the profits that they've been making for years from these facilities. Would it not be possible, as service stations that are required to replace leaking gas tanks, to have any companies that want to do new facilities of any kind here in Portland that own those tanks to mitigate those problems, which are easily done? It's not a big thing. It might be a bit expensive, but that's basically my issue, and I'm wondering if there's any response from you on that.
I think we've tried in the language to make sure that we don't stand in the way of any resiliency improvements in those kinds of facilities. Moving to the next step of actually requiring them could be one of those code actions that comes from adopting this resolution. So the resolution establishes the direction, then our staff will be bringing all kinds of code changes that reflect that and what we require. So first step is to say we're certainly not stopping anyone from making resiliency improvements, because you're right. And Commissioner Novick and his bureau constantly point out the huge vulnerability that you just mentioned. So that'll really be the next stage of this work, but thank you.
The other thing then, I guess that means then that there is some possibility of putting teeth into this.
There is.
As opposed to having it simply be voluntary on the corporation.
Absolutely. Part. Yeah, no, we're not looking just for voluntary compliance. So understand.
Thank you. I appreciate that clarification.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you so much.